नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
So today we begin the third, the first chapter of the third canto. We begin the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the third canto of the Bhagavatam begins with questions by Vidura. And Vidura originally approached Uddhava with his questions. And then wound up speaking with Maitreya, because Maitreya was older, more senior to Vidura, at least in age. I mean, senior to Uddhava, at least in age. And he had been present when Krishna had instructed Uddhava, and so Uddhava ultimately instructed Vidura to please go and hear from Maitreya. So he approached Maitreya. Now here we have Sukadeva Goswami speaking to Parikit and recounting that event. And Parikit is asking why, or what were the questions? What was the knowledge that Vidura, anything that Vidura and Maitreya must have spoken must have been very valuable to hear, because they're both great souls. And so their conversation must be very valuable. So please, you explain it to me. And as the description of that conversation unfolds, Sukadeva Goswami begins by explaining the events that led up to Vidura's leaving home. Vidura was a very exceptional person. He is a very exceptional person. And he handled many, many situations in exceptional ways, very exceptional ways. And so to understand the depth of what he had gone through in order to get him to a certain point, and then allow him, then Krishna's arrangement to allow him to leave the palace at a very, very critical time, are described here in the first 16 verses of this third chapter. So first we hear how the Pandavas suffered in many, many different ways, and a little bit we hear, very little, about how Vidura intervened or didn't intervene. The Pandavas were threatened in many, many ways in their lives. If you know Mahabharata at all, then you're aware. Of course there was an attempt made to kill them, not only to kill them, but to kill their mother as well. One might think that warriors might be intriguing against other warriors, but when it comes down to your mother, that gets really serious. So the five Pandavas were sent to a place, Varnavat, and they were put in a house that was made out of highly flammable substances. And they were told to go there on the plea of having a vacation. And so they went there, but immediately upon entering the house, there was some suspicion. They smelled funny, like lacquer. That's what my house smells like now. Paint, fresh paint, varnish. And they smelled that this house, something's weird about this house. And on inspecting it, they saw this house is destined. It's made in a way that's going to burn up really fast. So Vidura intervened. Now he had choices, right? We all have choices. So he could have gone to the king and screamed at him. He could have told the people. He could have started talking amongst the citizens, you know, because everybody loved Yudhisthira and the Pandavas. And so if he would have said to them, you know, secretly even, maybe by email or on their iPods, he could have sent them all text messages and said, you know, Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana, especially Duryodhana, with Dhritarashtra's sanction, they're trying to kill the Pandavas. They've set up a situation where it's going to look like an accident, but really it's murder. But Vidura didn't do that. He didn't say anything to anyone. He didn't even tell Grandfather Bhishma, which was something Grandfather Bhishma was actually very angry with him for a long time. But Vidura knew that Bhishma would get so angry that he wouldn't be able to keep the secret. So he didn't even tell Grandfather Bhishma. Vidura was so controlled and so tolerant that he could keep the secret, even though he knew Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra were plotting against the lives of the Pandavas. What he did was he intervened in such a way as to save the lives of the Pandavas, but in no way did he interfere with Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra's behavior. No way. They didn't even know that he knew. They didn't know, even at the end, they didn't know that he intervened. He sent a tunnel digger, and in some kind of coded language, he told Yudhisthira, this house is going to go up in smoke, and on a such and such day, or I'm here to dig a tunnel for you, because your escape is being arranged. So the tunnel digger came, and he dug a tunnel, and ultimately, the Pandavas escaped, and when the fire took place, everyone thought they were dead, including Bhishma, who locked himself in a room for a year, just going through the mourning process. He said, don't talk to me. When I'm ready to handle people, I'll come out. Until then, just put my food by the door and get lost. So Vidura was so diplomatic, so Krishna conscious, so able to be tolerant that he didn't say a word. Imagine that. He saved them, but he didn't say a word. And then there are other incidences which are described here throughout these verses. It starts with Sukadeva Goswami's pleasure at Parikshit's questions. We have this happening again and again in the Bhagavatam. Perfect questions, perfect answers, right? So when we ask perfect questions, then a devotee becomes very pleased to give us perfect answers. And so throughout the Bhagavatam, you have conversations of people who are giving perfect questions and people who are giving perfect answers. And both of those persons are essential to a good dialogue. You can't give perfect answers to a fool. A fool won't appreciate. Prabhupada compares it, you give a bunch of pearls to a swine, and he doesn't know what to do with it. You know, it breaks it, pearls go all over the place, or the monkey, he'll take it and tear it and throw it away. Doesn't appreciate the greatness. So a person who appreciates the greatness of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness is an inspiration to a speaker. That's why people like to come here and give classes, right? Because the people who are hearing are so qualified, and they want to hear, they're enthusiastic to hear, and they ask, where's the question asker? They ask really good questions, and so it's inspirational to come and to give a class, to speak in front of persons who are eager to hear. It's enlivening. So Sukadeva Goswami was enlivened, and especially he was enlivened to tell this story. And I know from my own experience, because I also love telling Mahabharata stories, and stories of Vidura in particular, because he is such an amazing, exceptional personality. So then we get the story, okay, as it unfolds. So it started with the fire. Many, many things happened. And then ultimately, no matter how the arrangements were made, to try to placate Duryodhana's greed and envy, still he was always envious. And he wanted more, and he would never settle for any kind of secondary arrangement. Even his father, on the advice of Vidura and others, decided to divide the kingdom at one point. And he gave the Pandavas a part of the kingdom which was barren, right? The whole kingdom was fantastic. Hastinapur, it was famous. It was a beautiful kingdom, and it was very well laid out and very wealthy. But there was another part of the kingdom which was like a desert. And so he divided the kingdom in such a way that the Pandavas had the desert part and his sons had the other part. And so he thought, okay, well, now Duryodhana will be happy because the Pandavas will have, you know, literally a very not very nice part, and my sons will still have everything. But it didn't work that way. Because Yudhisthira and the Pandavas, they had Krishna on their side. And so when they went to Indraprastha, or when they went to this barren bit of land, by Krishna's will and the hard work of the Pandavas, first of all, when they went, just even they were going to a barren bit of land, all the people from Hastinapur wanted to go with Yudhisthira. They were ready to walk out. They would have left Hastinapur beautiful with nothing, no one in it, just things, but no people. Right? The kind of bomb, they have these bombs that kill all the people and leave all the buildings. So that this is what, it was a love bomb. They loved Yudhisthira so much and appreciated his guidance so much that they wanted all go. We had that with Ram also, right? When Ram left, everybody was, okay, we'll leave. No, we don't need to be here. We'll just go with you wherever. Even you're going to the forest, even you're going to the desert. So this also points to something here, that the value of relationships and the value of association with a devotee who is also qualified as a leader is invaluable. And so we're willing to sacrifice in order to get that. We're willing to give up anything. These people were willing to live in the desert. But Duryodhana got really mad. He said, no, wait a minute. You can't take everybody away. That's not going to work. And then you go by yourself. Okay, so they went and they built up again. They built up for the first time, Indraprastha, with the help of, what's his name? Mayadhanava, yes, and also Vishwakarma, thank you. They built up Indraprastha very beautifully, and they built a very fantastic city, amazing city. And then they had the inauguration of that city, and they invited everybody to come. And Dhritarashtra came. Oh no, Dhritarashtra didn't come, but Duryodhana came. And they put Duryodhana in a very interesting place. They put him in charge of, you know how sometimes when you have like a housewarming party or a shower or some kind of party, everybody brings a gift. And then it's your obligation as a guest, as the host, to do what? What are you supposed to do if you get a gift? Maybe it's not actually not Indian culture to say thank you. But Western, yeah, you return it for cash. But Western culture is that you have to say thank you, right? Mother teaches you that from a very young age. If you don't say thank you, you get in big trouble. Right? I know from my mother, if she sends me something and within 3 days I don't say thank you, she'll let me know it with a good Jewish guilt trip. So very, very important to say, to offer some gratitude, to be responsive. So Duryodhana was put in the position where he was supposed to keep a list of all the gifts that were given to the Pandavas when they had their housewarming party in Indraprastha, which was an interesting place to put Duryodhana because now he was seeing all the wealth. Here's, all these elephants and here's armies and here's tons of gold and here's jewels. And I mean, these people had nothing, right? They sent them out there. They didn't have anything. They went to a desert. Now, all of a sudden, kings from all over, demigods were bringing tribute, beautiful jewelry and fantastic wealth, amazing wealth, more wealth than Duryodhana had. And all the time he's watching it build up, writing it down. So-and-so brought this, so-and-so brought that. And he's like freaking out and his envy is just building and building. You can imagine, right? You can imagine. So what to do? So his uncle Shakuni came up with a solution and the solution was, I know how to get this because Yudhisthira, he likes to gamble. So even while they were still there, they stayed for a few days and Duryodhana controlled his envy and pretended like he was really happy, even though he got quite embarrassed in that situation, which is a whole other story. And that also enkindled his desire for revenge, his desire for anger, his desire to get the possessions of the Pandavas back at all costs. So they played some dice games, just friendly dice games, and they let Yudhisthira win again and again and again. So then Yudhisthira was feeling pretty good about that, and then they later, they had a plan. So they invited Yudhisthira and the Pandavas to Hastinapur for a big game of dice, like a tournament. And they made a big spiel out of it. They had a huge palace, and they took care of everybody. Now, there's something very interesting that everybody came to see this game of dice, but the game of dice was rigged. And actually, when they got there, Dhritarashtra said, Duryodhana said, well, I'm not going to really play. I'm going to let my uncle Shakuni play in my stead. And Yudhisthira, due to Kshatriya Dharma and his understanding that, you know, his uncle had invited him, he was an older, respectable person, he couldn't really refuse him, although he knew, and everyone had told him also, but he also knew intuitively, this is not a good thing. He played and he lost everything. He lost everything. And he lost the kingdom. That kingdom that he had just built, everything, he lost the kingdom. And so the Pandavas were sent into exile. And even that was done with some finagling. At first they didn't want to give him anything, and then they tried to disrobe Draupadi because the Pandavas had now technically become slaves. And so therefore Draupadi, who was their wife, had now, at least by Duryodhana's estimation, become the slave of the Kauravas. So they took her, and they tried, Dushasana tried to take advantage of her. They brought her out because she was in a private place, not in the assembly. And they brought her out by pulling her by her hair. And they made an attempt to disrobe her in public. How humiliating. And especially for her, she was a queen, and she was born of fire. She was a very special person. And this was royalty. Her husbands were there, and they were helpless. Right? Everybody. So then this huge situation, Bhishma was sitting there. And all the great Kuros and all the great leaders of the dynasty were sitting there. And the only one who spoke up, well, two people spoke up, but the only person who really spoke up was Vidura. Everybody else found themselves silenced. Even Grandfather Bhishma couldn't speak the truth. He said, I don't know what to do. It's a technical thing, you know? We have this law and we have this law, and I'm not sure which one kicks in this particular situation. We don't have a whole lot of women being raped in assembly, so I'm not really exactly sure what we're supposed to do in this particular case. But Vidura, he was outspoken. He had nothing to lose. You see, that's the key. If you are familiar a little bit with Chanaka Pandit, how many of you have heard of Chanaka Pandit? Okay. So Chanaka Pandit, he was a minister, as was Vidura. And when Chanaka Pandit was offered to come and live in the kingdom, he said, I'll give you a palace. He said, I don't want a palace. I'll live outside in the forest. Why did he say that? You know? Anyone know? I know, you know.
What did he say? Huh?
So the thing is, if he doesn't have anything, he won't even have the fear to lose it.
Exactly. If you don't have anything, you can't be fearful about losing anything. So he said to the king, he said, I'm going to have to tell you things that you don't like to hear. You're going to ask me questions, and I'm going to want to give you honest answers. If I'm beholden to you, as you said, then I will have to tell you what you want to hear, and I won't be doing my job honestly. So Vidura was like that also. He was not attached to anything. He had a beautiful palace, and he had a good family, but he was ready to walk, as we'll see shortly. He didn't have any attachment to any of it. And because he was unattached and completely faithful and confident in the word, in the protection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was able to tell Dhritarashtra what no one else could tell Dhritarashtra. And in this situation, in the assembly, he was the only one who spoke up truthfully. But of course, it was mitigated to some extent. Dhritarashtra became frightened because of Draupadi's experience with Krishna providing so many lengths of cloth that she couldn't be disrobed. And so Dhritarashtra became frightened. Well, this is no ordinary situation. And he gave her some benediction. Okay, let's call the whole thing off. Just pretend this never happened. You should really be tolerant. He preached to her about tolerance. Right? He told her. He said, tolerance is a very important quality, and I know that you were wronged in this assembly, but you should be tolerant. Great people, great saintly persons, they're tolerant. And you Pandavas also, who were seething, Bhima was ready to kill, and you should be tolerant. So it's okay. So ultimately what happened was they did one more game, and they were sent into exile. They had to leave their paraphernalia, their new kingdom that they had just designed, and they went away thinking they would get it back after 13 years and 1 year in exile. Now, it's interesting to note and not mentioned here that Vidura at that time was also thrown out of the kingdom. During that time when the Pandavas were gone, when they first left, it was after the first few days, Vidura went to Dhritarashtra and said, you should call them back right away. This is ridiculous. You know, you sent them away. They're your sons. They're the rightful heir to the kingdom. And you have no right to do this. You should call them back. And because of that, Dhritarashtra got angry and accused him of favoritism, as was common. Refused to follow his instructions. So Vidura left. He went out to the king to see the Pandavas in the forest. But then when Grandfather Bhishma heard, he went to Dhritarashtra and he said, go get Vidura back, otherwise your whole kingdom will fall apart. He's the only one around here who has a brain, who actually says what needs to be heard. And if you don't bring him back here, there's no question of you being able to rule this kingdom. So he sent a chariot and he picked up Vidura, and Vidura came back within 24 hours. You know? So that was the first time Vidura left. So then, the whole exile happened, and that's a whole story in itself. Many stories, many stories, many stories. And then finally, the years of exile were over. The year of incognito was over. And the Pandavas were ready to take back their kingdom. But as they were ready to take back their kingdom, Duryodhana said, forget about it. And he contrived so many different reasons why they couldn't get their kingdom. You can't have your kingdom. It's my kingdom. You didn't fill the orders, the rules of the game. And I knew, you know, you got discovered before you were supposed to. So many things, technicalities and calendar issues. So what actually had happened is they didn't calculate for Ekadasi. They didn't calculate for Purushottama Mas. And because they didn't calculate for Purushottama Mas, after so many years, it had added up to quite a bit of time, right? Another year. And so they were, the Kauravas were a year off in their calculation. And therefore, the Pandavas were right. But anyway, that was another argument. So Krishna was determined. He was determined that no one would look at the history and think that the Pandavas were responsible for the war, for the Battle of Kurukshetra. It was inevitable. Krishna knew it was inevitable. However, he did not want the blame for the war to fall in any way on the Pandavas. And so therefore, even though the Pandavas were eager to go and fight for their kingdom immediately, Krishna said no. He said, no, I don't want you to fight yet. We're going to go and ask for peace. And especially Arjuna and Bhima were, what? Peace? Are you serious? We've been in the forest for 13 years and now you want us to have peace? But he went. Krishna went himself as the Shanti Dut. It's mentioned here in these verses. Krishna went as the Shanti Dut and he appeared in the assembly of Dhritarashtra, and there again sitting Bhishma, and there sitting Drona. And he said, listen, why don't you give the kingdom back? And of course, Dhritarashtra said, no way. And so he said, okay, just give them 5 villages. Because, you know, they're Kshatriyas. They have to rule. That's their dharma. They can't work for anybody else. That's what they're supposed to do. Just give them 5 villages so they can each rule one. And then we'll call it even Stephen. But Duryodhana wouldn't do it. And he said, I won't give them as much land as they can put on the head of a pin. So at that point, Duryodhana tried to arrest Krishna, which was kind of humorous for Krishna. And so he appeared in a universal form and got bigger and brighter than thousands of suns. And his arrest was made impossible. The soldiers couldn't do it. Duryodhana thought it was a magic trick, but it foiled his attempt. And then the battle of Kurukshetra was inevitable. At that moment, it really became inevitable that the battle of Kurukshetra was to be fought. Now, there were many people who had a dilemma with this. Balaram had a dilemma with this, right? Because he didn't want to fight on either side. He had some affection for Duryodhana as a student of his. And so he went on pilgrimage. He said, I'm not going to take sides in this one. I'm out of here. So he went on pilgrimage. And Vidura also was uncomfortable. He had tried again and again and again to intervene on the Pandavas' side, to give Duryodhana good counsel, to give Dhritarashtra especially good counsel, to say, you're the king, not your son. Why are you favoring this person who is going to be the destruction of the entire dynasty? He tells him in these verses you hear that he says, this son of yours is so evil and so corrupt and so envious and so full of anger. All the opposite qualities of a devotee, right? You're reading the qualities of a devotee, right? Duryodhana didn't have any of them. And Dhritarashtra didn't really have a whole lot of them either. So he gave him so many good advices, so much time he spent with him trying to counsel him, trying to help him to rule the kingdom properly, and ultimately to not, because he was completely controlled by affection for his son and a vicarious desire to have the crown forever in the form of giving it to his family. He wanted to pass it down in his family. He was so attached to that crown. He didn't want Yudhisthira to have it. He didn't want it to go to the Pandavas, and therefore he couldn't listen to good counsel. Vidura tried so hard. But it was impossible. So now it was over. There was nothing that can be done. Vidura had spoken, and as my mother would say, he spoke to him till he was blue in the face. And it didn't look like Krishna. He just looked frustrated. And he just didn't know what else to do. So how to get out, though? He was an employee. He was an inferior member of the family. It's explained here that he was a son of a maidservant. And because he was a son of a maidservant, even though he was treated with respect, he was extremely wise, everybody saw him as a saintly person, still socially, he was in a lower position. And he wasn't able to just do whatever he wanted. He couldn't just say, listen, you have your war, I'm out of here, give me my chariot and my pension and I'm going to go away. He couldn't do that. So when he tried one more time to give Dhritarashtra good counsel. You know, it's a good idea. Give them 5 villages and at least there'll be peace. Dhritarashtra, under the guidance again of Duryodhana, became so angry, or Duryodhana speaking and Dhritarashtra being silent, which, by the way, is also a choice. Right? Silence is a choice. In other words, if you see something going on wrong and you decide not to do anything about it, that's a choice. That itself expresses your opinion. We'll get to that in a little while. So Vidura saw, he tried to intervene. He tried to say, don't do this. But Duryodhana was so insulting. He insulted his family line. He just was so insulting. And he took it as a sign from Krishna. He thought, this is my opportunity. Even though I'm not insulted, I could care less what this fool says. His destiny is written. I already see it. The writing on the wall is there. This dynasty is finished. Dhritarashtra is finished. Duryodhana is finished. The Kauravas are finished. Because they're losing their ability to discern right from wrong. Their piety is diminishing. They've been living on a bank account. You know, they had this charge card. And now the credit limit is reached. They have no more credit limit. You know, so they're gonna, that's it now. The fun's over. They can't pay for anything more. And actually, that's an analogy which bears some reality, because the way Duryodhana kept his kingdom in order was that he would pay off people and the citizens with money so that they wouldn't revolt. He was constantly giving money to everybody until their treasury was always depleted. That's why he had to constantly send people out to conquer, because he constantly needed money to pay off people so that they would be, at least pretend to be satisfied. So now the payoff was over, and the time was coming for the final battle. And Vidura took it as a sign from Krishna, as the mercy of the Supreme Lord, a personal arrangement on the part of Krishna to get him out of there so that he didn't have to be there for the war, that he didn't have to support Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana with his bow. And he left. That was his cue. He just put his bow by the door and he disappeared. And actually, Dhritarashtra was talking to him. He didn't even know he was gone, because he was blind. He couldn't see. And Vidura didn't argue back. He didn't say anything. He just walked out. And Dhritarashtra was speaking to him, and he realized, I'm talking to a wall. There's nobody here. He's gone. Where is he? But he was gone. That was it. He was finished. So this is kind of where we wind up here in these first 16 verses of this of this part of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's interesting to note, when you look at Vidura, first of all, how selfless he was. He was completely unattached to anything material. And so he was absorbed completely in the Supreme Personality of God. And it's described that when Krishna came to visit, he was invited to dinner in two different places. He was invited to eat with Duryodhana, and he was invited to eat with Vidura. If he had eaten with Duryodhana, he would have been in a big fancy, everything very pukka, very, I think they had given him Dushasana's palace. And they had the best cooks and fine foods and everything very, very opulent. But Krishna refused to go there. He said, it's not, you never should eat with an enemy. And because you, the Kauravas, have taken enmity towards the Pandavas, who are my dear devotees, my dear friends. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita to Krishna, to Arjuna, I'm speaking this knowledge to you because why? Because you are my friend. Because you're free from envy and because you're my friend. So because you're my friend, because you're insulting my friend, because you're trying to take things unfairly away from my friends, because you are made so many horrible offenses to my friend. Why should I eat with you? I'll get indigestion. I'll just go with Vidura. Which was a real slap in the face, because Vidura was a, you know, he was the son of a Sudra. And so he went to his simple palace, and there's a nice story how many different versions of who was doing it, but either Vidura or his wife, one of them was feeding Krishna bananas, but they were so absorbed in Krishna, just looking at Krishna's lotus face, that they were peeling the bananas and giving Krishna the peels and throwing away the bananas. And Krishna was just eating the peels. He was perfectly happy to eat the peels because they were being offered with so much love and devotion. And, you know, Krishna, he can turn anything into anything. It didn't matter to him. So he was eating those peels offered with devotion, rather than eating a big opulent feast offered with lust and commotion. Right? Oh, I thought it ended at 8:30. Am I wrong?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So, well, I'm kind of covering the verse. So here we have this opportunity, Vidura, the verse that we're reading today, thus being pierced by arrows through his ears, the hearing that, oh, was so terrible, and afflicted to the core of his heart, Vidura placed his bow at the door and quit his brother's palace. He was not sorry, for he considered the acts of the external energy to be supreme. Am I supposed to read this purport? Okay, students, read it.
A pure devotee of the Lord is never perturbed by an awkward position created by the external energy of the Lord. The Bhagavad Gita, it is stated, Prakriti kriyamanani gunahi karmani sarvashaha ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. A conditioned soul is absorbed in the material existence under the influence of different modes of external energy. Absorbed in the false ego, he thinks that he is doing everything by himself. The external energy of the Lord is of the Lord, the material nature, is fully under the control of the Supreme Lord, and the conditioned soul himself, independent in his, is fully under the control of the Lord, law of the Lord. But due to the illusion only, he thinks himself independent in his activities. Duryodhana was acting under such influence of the external nature by which he would be vanquished at the ultimate end. He could not accept the sound advice of Vidura, but on the contrary, he insulted that great soul who was the well-wisher of his whole family. Vidura could understand this because he was a pure devotee of the Lord. In spite of being very strongly insulted by Duryodhana's word, Vidura could see that Duryodhana, under the influence of Maya, the external energy, was making progress on the path towards his own ruination. He therefore considered the acts of the external energy to be supreme. Yet he also saw how the internal energy of the Lord helped him in that particular situation. A devotee is always in a renounced temperament because the worldly attraction can never satisfy him.
Vidura was never attracted, right?
Yes.
Vidura was never attracted by the royal palace of his brother. He was always ready to leave the palace and devote himself completely to the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Now he got the opportunity by the grace of Duryodhana, and instead of being sorry at the strong words of insult, he thanked him from within because it gave him the chance to live alone in a holy place and fully engage in the devotional service of the Lord. The word gata vyataha, without being sorry, is significant here because Vidura was relieved from the tribulations which trouble every man entangled in material activities. He therefore thought that there was no need to defend his brother with his bow because his brother was meant for renunciation. Thus he left the palace before Duryodhana could act. Maya, the supreme energy of the Lord, acted here both internally and externally.
So I was sort of addressing the points in this purport. That Vidura was so detached that, first of all, he could be without any kind of malice. He could be tolerant because he knew that Krishna's will was being done, whatever Krishna's will was. He intervened only to protect the devotees, but he never retaliated, which is such an amazing quality when you think about it. To be tolerant, to accept what comes on yourself is one thing, but to be able to not react at all, to not try to counteract or to try to get revenge, is certainly the quality of a Mahatma. And if we see this whole intrigue that took place, we just saw little parts of it here in these first 15 verses, or actually these eight verses of this part of the Bhagavatam, where these incidents are described, we get a glimpse of the trouble that the Pandavas went through and the way Vidura saw it, that he knew that it was Krishna working and he knew that ultimately Krishna's will would be done. He knew ultimately that the Kauravas would be defeated and the Pandavas would be successful unless by some miracle the Kauravas were able to accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which he tried. And it's interesting to note also that later on in the Bhagavatam, you'll see that Vidura actually comes back. He leaves for the duration of the war, and then when the war is over and the Kauravas have lost, Dhritarashtra is living with the Pandavas. Yudhisthira is taking care of him. Now he's sonless. All his sons have been killed. And Vidura loved his brother so much, cared so much about him on a spiritual level. He was always trying to take care of him on a spiritual level. So this is another point, that our tolerance, our ability to be able to see the material energy as Daivi Esha Gunamayi Mama Maya Duratyaya, it's under, this material energy is under Krishna. Right? Nothing happens without Krishna's will. Nothing. So if we can see that, then we can be tolerant, knowing that if I maintain my attitude of devotion towards Krishna, then no matter what happens to me, Krishna has a lesson to be, he's teaching me. He's doing something through the workings of the material energy that is meant to enhance my spiritual advancement, that is meant to bring me from point A to point B. Now, I can go there voluntarily or I can go there kicking and screaming, but one way or the other, I'm going to wind up there. If it doesn't happen this time, then Krishna will kick me again. The material energy will kick me again. And eventually, I will get there, either in this lifetime or in 10 lifetimes. So for the devotee, and someone, Mahatma Vidura was one of the 12 Mahajans, so he's an exceptional person. But even for us, this ability to be able to be tolerant and also merciful at the same time, this combination of being able to accept whatever hardships come on oneself and at the same time wish well for the people and the situations that are causing those hardships. This is a very difficult thing. And it's something which devotees work to cultivate, to be able to see Krishna's hand and be so confident in Krishna's hand that they could chant the prayer you learned before, Vipadaksantatashashvat. I heard that you were chanting that every day. You're very brave. So that means that you must have very much confidence in Krishna. Because to be able to chant that verse prayerfully every day is putting yourself in right in the path and saying, okay, Krishna, sock it to me. Whatever it is that I'm supposed to have, let me have it. I'm ready. I'm going to think of you when the calamities come. And then thinking of you when the calamities come and also being able to be a well-wisher, to be a well-wisher of the carrier of the calamity, we should consider something very carefully, that each of us has some karma, right? We come into this world with what we call parabdha and aparabdha karma, right? Parabdha karma is the karma that you see right in front of your face, right? You've got a body, we're wealthy, you're healthy, you're smart, you're whatever you are. So you've got that. That's happening. But there's things happening to you every day that are happening from that big bag of karma that you carry around on your shoulders. Every day something's coming out and jumping at you. Sometimes it's, you know, maybe you win the lottery, and sometimes it's maybe that you get punched in the face or you get in a car accident. But there's constantly karmic activity coming at you, both positive and negative. Now, when you become a devotee, back up a second. Most of that karmic activity is delivered to you by either adibhautik, adidaivik, or adiatmik way, right? All of that. It either comes from other living entities, or it comes from the weather, or, you know, some demigod situation, or it comes from your own mind and senses. Now, your own mind and senses, okay, you can work on that. You can go to landmark seminars, or you can chant extra rounds depending on your, you know, you can try to control your mind. And there are those events like hurricanes and those kind of things you can't really do much about. But the vast majority of your suffering is coming to you as a result of your interaction with other persons, right? Your baby left you when you loved her and she loved you, but then she didn't love you anymore and she left you sad and brokenhearted. And, you know, that teacher, he was such a creep and you did everything right, but he gave you a bad grade. And so many things are going on, right? We live in an ashram situation. That's a very great test of interpersonal relationships. And we find that even people we love, sometimes they leave their dirty socks laying around and it's a problem, right? Why don't they clean up? So it's a problem, and we suffer our karma at the hands of the people who are closest to us. Those are the people who become the agents of our karma. So since we're devotees now, and we don't really associate very intimately with non-devotees, then now Krishna is arranging to give us the karma that he wants us to have through the agency of the Vaishnavas who are sitting in this room. So the people who are sitting in this room, you should be very grateful to them. They are the agents of your karma. They are your teachers. They are the people who are helping you to advance in spiritual life by teaching you the lessons that you need to learn. You should be grateful. Sometimes those lessons may be a little like this, right? Mata was like that. She sometimes had to do this or sometimes had to chastise. And if we're wise, we will appreciate it. I saw this little movie someone sent me where it was about how you should love your parents or respect your parents. And it was in another language. I'm not sure which language. So there was this old man and he was sitting on a bench and his son was sitting next to him, son maybe now 26, 27. You saw? Yeah. Huh? Yes. Yes. Right, right. So the father kept asking the boy, what is that? And the boy said it was a sparrow. Now this is a man now. He was reading the newspaper. So several times, 3, 4, 5 times in succession, the father said, what is that? And he said, it's a sparrow. And he said, what is that? It's a sparrow. What is that? For gosh sakes, why do you keep asking me that? It's a sparrow. And then he gets really mad and he loses his cool. So his father gets up and he walks away and he comes back with a diary. And he gives the diary to the boy and he says, read this and read it out loud. So what the boy is reading out loud is that when he was a little boy, only 3 or 2, he kept asking me 21 times, what is this? What is this? What is this? And every time I would answer him, it's a sparrow, and I would give him a hug because I loved him so much and I was so happy to see his behavior. And so as the boy is reading this, he's realizing now that the situation is reversed and how rude he was being and how quickly he had come to become angry when his father had been so tolerant of his behavior before. And so he gave his father a hug and they kissed and made up. Everything is very nice. So this is the tolerance that we learn from the devotees of Krishna. And we learn it from the devotees sitting right here. We don't only learn it from the Viduras in the Bhagavatam, but we learn it from each other. Because we are teaching each other lessons. Krishna is teaching us lessons every minute. And our responsibility to learn them is to be tolerant and to see how these events in our life are moving us closer to Krishna. If we can appreciate that, then we can truly become tolerant. Not just gritting your teeth and being tolerant, but growing and being tolerant. And I think my time is up, right? Did I succeed? So I'll ask if there's any questions. Yes. That was fast.
It's interesting. I think we had a previous lecture where one of the speakers, he was saying that in situations where you think that you have been wronged by someone, internally you shouldn't take offense. You should, externally you should have to act in a way so as to correct his activity. Or so that is a question, like, then should that external thing be there? Or the second thing which you said, the tolerant, being tolerant, I'll be tolerant. Then that's not really tolerance. Right. It's actually, like poison for you. Mm-hmm. So how do we get rid of that?
Yeah, that kind of tolerance is like drinking poison and expecting someone else to die from it. If you drink poison and you expect someone else to die from it. Because they're not at all affected by your anger and all that stuff that's going on in your heart. And it's killing you. But you're thinking you're getting even, somehow they're going to suffer. You know, you send their bad energy in that direction. As far as dealing with the other person and correcting them, that really depends a lot on the circumstance. And I wouldn't say that that is an answer for all times. Because Vidura was in a situation, for example, where he had a limited sphere of influence. Have you heard this expression, sphere of influence? So we have a sphere of influence. And sometimes within the sphere of influence, we may find that we can affect change. We might be able to help somebody progress. That has to be our motive. If the motive is, I'm wrong, but I'm so righteous that I'm not going to take any offense. But I got to straighten that guy out. Then that's not really being tolerant, and the motive is wrong, and because the motive is wrong, the reaction will also be wrong. If you see that someone is in danger in their spiritual life and you try to help them to avert that danger, which is what Vidura did repeatedly with Dhritarashtra, and I was saying before, you'll see later in the Bhagavatam that even after the war is over, Dhritarashtra's whole life has been devastated. His kids are dead. He's living in the house of Yudhisthira, who was his enemy. He had tried to kill Yudhisthira for years, and now he was living in his house, and he was living off Yudhisthira and the Pandavas. And Vidura still, even after being in exile, you know, going out on pilgrimage, even after all the destruction that took place that could have been avoided if Dhritarashtra would have just listened to good sense, he comes back and he tries again. And he says some very heavy words.
That was earlier.
Okay, yeah.
And we already covered.
Okay, good. All right, sorry. So he says some very heavy words. Sorry. Yeah, that was before. But it's after in my mind because I'm going sequentially. Sorry. So he was, you heard those words. They were heavy words, but that took place after this. Right? So much for the chronology. That took place after this. This is Vidura leaving before that ever took place. So he comes back. Even though he's tried, he's banged his head against the wall so many times, he comes back one more crack at it. I'm going to save this guy if there's any possible way that I can save him, right? And he gives it one last shot. And it's a heavy shot, too. Now, if someone came to you and said what Vidura said to Dhritarashtra, you would have to make some choices, right? Either you're going to punch him in the face or what are you going to do? But finally, Dhritarashtra was able to get it. And he left home. And how did he leave home? In the way he left home, Vidura didn't just say, get out of here. He said, sneak out of here. Because if you don't sneak out of here, Yudhisthira is going to pull you back and you're going to be too weak to deal with it. And then you're going to come back and you're going to keep doing the same thing. So you got to sneak out of here. And that's another lesson for us in tolerance, is that our motive, our purity of motive, when we speak to somebody and we want to, as you ask, what's your name, Prabhu?
Sagar.
Oh, yeah, the one in charge of the Bhakti Club. I just became your friend on Facebook. nice to meet you in Facebook. I mean, in person. When I try to correct that person who's doing something wrong, what is the motive for my correcting them? Will correcting them help them? Will it inspire them? Will it move them along? Or will it just make me feel self-righteous? If it's to make me feel better, don't do it. And especially don't do it if you don't think you can be effective. Just to get the words out so that, you know, you heard yourself say you're wrong. And you think he heard you say, but he probably didn't hear at all. So there's got to be a motive of purity, a pure desire to help that person really make spiritual advancement. And you have to have the adhikar, the right, the privilege, the relationship to be able to be effective. Maybe the most effective thing for you to do is to make the decision not to do anything. Maybe the most effective thing for you to do is to go tell somebody who's more potent than you are in this situation and then let them do whatever they want. Now, that's a tough one, right? Because usually when I go to somebody and I say, he did such and such, I expect you to say, really? Oh, my goodness, how could he do such a thing? And to get up with it, at least within the next day or two, and call that guy into the office and blast him through to kingdom come, right? And if he doesn't do it, then you get mad at the temple president. But that's not a pure motive, right? If you give your problem over to Krishna and you say to Krishna or some representative of Krishna, this appears to me to be, I've been wronged, but I'm putting it in your hands, then Krishna will do what he thinks is right. Krishna gave Draupadi cloth. He did not kill the Kauravas. He took care of her problem, but he did not take care of the Kauravas. They still went on with their stuff. And Vidura did the same thing. He saved the Pandavas, but he did not do anything to the Kauravas. One could say, well, come on, he could have stopped a whole lot of trouble if he would have just put it on the internet, you know, and told everybody, sent out flyers. Why didn't he do? But he saw Krishna had a plan, and that plan had to go the way it had to go. We are not necessarily the person qualified to alter Krishna's plan. So if we go in thinking that we're going to be the knight in shining armor, we may come out tarnished. But if we go in with a humble service attitude and try to help somebody advance in spiritual life, then we do our best. And we're, again, not attached to the results. So that's the key.
Why didn't Krishna do anything to the Kauravas?
The war, whatever Krishna's will was, it had to happen. And he knew that Krishna was personally involved. So who was he to try to do anything about that.
So that's a question. Like, my question is like,
in the purport we read that like external energy is under Krishna's control. So like
only if you're okay. Go ahead, finish your question.
Yeah, like we hear from that. Like, whatever happened to Pandavas and all the sufferings that they went through was actually Krishna wanted them. Like, this is also one of the reasons. Krishna wanted them to go under these miseries, sufferings, so that they can be glorified as how great devotees they are, that they didn't even say anything to retaliate, and they still, like,
were. If it was you, you would say, Krishna, I'd rather not be glorified and leave off the suffering.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? Isn't it? But don't worry about the glorification. I can live without it. Just get rid of the suffering is what the problem is.
But then, like, so, then how, like, say Vidura and Vidura knew that, like, actually, like, Krishna is doing all this because he wants to, like, teach the world lesson.
But Vidura is not trying to second guess Krishna.
Oh, okay.
He's just trying to let Krishna's will unfold, whatever it is. If Krishna would have decided to give the kingdom back to the Pandavas and, you know, wipe out the Kauravas with a plague, he would have been fine with that too. It's totally up to Krishna to do whatever. So Vidura saw that he had a limited sphere of influence. And he used that sphere of influence as much as he could. And when he saw he was helpless, he left and went on pilgrimage because he felt that that was the best thing he could do at that time. Then he came back because he thought, again, maybe now he's broken down a little bit. He's not in a position of power. My sphere of influence now again, maybe is a little bigger. I can try to do something with this brother of mine. But always his intention was to do the best thing. Always his intention had nothing for himself. He was never considering, I got to get even with this guy after all the trouble he gave me. Or even that I got to get even with this guy because of all the trouble he gave the Pandavas. Right? If we look at Bhishma, grandfather Bhishma on the battlefield when he's laying on the arrows and he's talking to Yudhisthira and he says, Nahi yasya karichit raja, no one understands the plan of the Lord Sri Krishna. Even though great philosophers inquire exhaustedly, still they're bewildered. Why is he saying that? Because he's looking at these great devotees and he's thinking, why did Krishna have you suffer so much? No one understands the plan of God. But he's not thinking, boy, Krishna, he's a sinner's in the hands of an angry God. You must have committed some sinful activity in your past. And that's all. He's not making any judgment. You know, he's just letting Krishna's will be done. And it's interesting, but we never have any trouble understanding why Krishna gives us wealth or why Krishna gives us fame. But we have such a hard time with why Krishna gives us a pain in the toe, you know. But all those things will teach us lessons, and we can learn them or not learn them. Being wealthy can be a detriment, and having a pain in the toe can be an asset, if we can see it. Is that all right?